Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Man, it's good waking up at 10 a.m. on a Sunday in mid-January, knowing the Kansas City Chiefs are still playing football. A seventh straight AFC Championship game incoming next Sunday night. I believe it's a 6:30 kickoff from Arrowhead Stadium as the Chiefs now await who their opponent is going to be. Either the Baltimore Ravens or the Buffalo Bills, depending on how tonight goes. It'll be Mahomes versus either Josh Allen or Lamar Jackson. Two guys who are constantly thrown into the same sentence as him when they're not deserving of it. So we'll see. But talking about the win yesterday for the Kansas City Chiefs, here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan, Logan Weber here, joined by our producer for this morning's show, Quentin Morris. We talked about the defensive line. Not even the defensive line, the pass rush for the Kansas City Chiefs yesterday. Eight sacks. Eight sacks as a team. Three of those, a hat trick, courtesy of third-year starter George Karloftis out of the University of Purdue, who had a remarkable day getting all three of them. Quentin, why don't you tee that up, play all three of these George Karloftis sacks for us.
Houston trying to snap it before the play count. Here comes a rush against Stroud on fourth down, and he's going to go down! The Chiefs not only hold, they get a sack! George Karloftis! This week, beating the chain back to his left, dangerous as a receiver. Stroud going left, he's going to be wrapped up and sacked back at the 24 by George Karloftis. The second big sack of this game by Karloftis, and for the Chiefs, five sacks on C.J. Stroud. Big play here, third and 10 Texans at the Kansas City 13. Tight triangle left of Stroud on the far side of the field. Takes the snap on the near side. Waits, calls another, and now he's going to call a audible. Agumba Wale is his halfback left. Stroud takes the third and 10 snap. Stepping up, he's engulfed and sacked again. Karloftis is just eating this team alive. And that is the eighth sack by Kansas City.
After an eight-plus sack season this year during the regular season, he puts together the first three-sack game of his career in the playoffs. I mean, three out of the eight sacks courtesy of that man, big number 56, Furious George, as he is otherwise called, the Greek freak by some with his, you know, Greek heritage. And, you know, I bring up George Karloftis again, and I play this three-sack performance from Karloftis again because I had said earlier this week on this show, you know, I believe it was Thursday afternoon or Thursday evening from 7 to 9, that I thought the Kansas City Chiefs should make it a priority to extend both Karloftis and Trent McDuffie rather than make it a priority to try to re-sign Nick Bolton or Trey Smith or both. And I think yesterday was kind of a bump to that statement. Trent McDuffie was unbelievable during yesterday's game. I saw a stat when he was one-on-one with Nico Collins during yesterday's game, right? He's wide receiver one for the Texans. Regardless of if Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell would have been healthy or not, Nico Collins is wide receiver one for the Texans. He's probably a top 20 receiver in the National Football League. They were one-on-one for 14 routes during yesterday's game. 14 routes that Nico Collins ran with Trent McDuffie as his primary cover. He was targeted on those 14 routes only three times. Of those three times he was targeted, he caught the ball just once for 24 yards. Trent McDuffie covered Nico Collins on 14 different passing situations, and Nico Collins caught it once. One time. That's how good Trent McDuffie is. I mean, he damn near had an interception early on in that game. C.J. Stroud down near the goal line in a red zone set threw a late out route behind Nico Collins. McDuffie did a great job of getting to the football right after McDuffie had left the game because he had made a tackle earlier in that drive and had kind of left for a little bit. He was a little bit banged up. He ended up in the tent and came back out. Kind of the first big hit of the day for him and a really cold one, so kind of had to adjust his body to it and came back out. But he was awesome. And George Karloftis doing what he did yesterday, I think, proved beyond a shadow of a doubt in my mind and kind of put forward in the minds of other people just how important he is to this Chiefs team because he makes life difficult on an offensive line. When you've got a guy as dominant as Chris Jones along that interior of the defensive line, a guy who is so versatile and get kicked outside to defensive end, you know, him and Karloftis complement each other really well in that respect. Because Karloftis is a defensive end who can come in and play defensive tackle in passing situations. Chris Jones is a defensive tackle who can get pushed out to defensive end in certain situations. They're so versatile. And when you have a guy like Chris Jones, who is constantly generating double teams and chip blocks and running backs who are trying to come in and throw a block and all those things, it puts Karloftis in a situation where he can go one-on-one. And he's a really tough guy to contend with one-on-one. And Karloftis is also really good in stopping the run as well. He sets the edge extremely well. He's got tremendous effort. There were a few times yesterday when Spags really got deep into his bag and was pulling off this masterclass of sending pressure. You saw George Karloftis dropping back into coverage. And you're like, and it wasn't like it was a one-off or two. He did it like four or five times throughout the game when they would send, you know, Bolton or Justin Reed or Shamari Connor or somebody off the edge or through the middle. He would drop back into coverage and did a good enough job in that respect. I think the versatility of George Karloftis can't be understated. And he has gotten better every year that he's been in this league. Every single year he has been in the National Football League, he's gotten better and better. He had a double-digit sack last year. He didn't have quite the sack numbers he had this year, but his pressure rate was better. His run-stop rate was better. And he just put together the first three-sack performance of his career. Trey Smith is going to reset the guard market, I think. You know, Quentin Nelson is making $20, $21 million a year. I think that might be the floor for Trey Smith. I think Trey Smith could make somewhere in the avenue of $23 or $24 million a year. Some guard desperate team who's trying to make a move, team, I don't know, like the Washington Commanders. I'm not saying that they will, but a team like that, you know, they may take a chance. The Cincinnati Bengals may take a chance, right? They overpaid for Orlando Brown after he had some good years in Kansas City. Who's to say that the Bengals don't try something like that again with Trey Smith? He's going to be far too expensive in my view. You've got to pay Creed Humphrey. You've got to pay Joe Tooney, right? You've got to figure out the left tackle position because as good a player as Joe Tooney is, he is a natural guard, right? He's not a natural left tackle, and he had his struggles yesterday. Will Anderson generated some pressures off him. Danielle Hunter generated some pressures. Will Anderson got a sack directly off of being one-on-one with Joe Tooney. So I think that you've got other issues along the offensive line that you can get figured out. I think with Nick Bolton, as much as Steve Spagnuolo loves him, if Spags is back, they may try to make a run at it, right? Depending on the price tag surrounding Nick Bolton. But I think that getting Trent McDuffie and George Karloftis extended for the long haul is a bigger priority than bringing either one or both of those guys back.
Yeah, the McDuffie thing I think is a no-brainer. You're talking about a guy that has made All-Pro multiple times in his career with little amounts of interceptions, right? That right there shows that the respect around the league is there. Yeah, that stat that you brought up that, you know, he was only targeted, Nico Collins was targeted four times against Trent McDuffie.
Three times on 14 rounds.
I mean, that's crazy, right? Because quarterbacks will throw to their guy, you know, whether they're open or not. So that's how close he was to him. And we've seen this all year, how McDuffie has been able to be on, right on top wide receivers in the NFL. So that right there. Trey Smith, to me, I don't want to mitigate what guards are able to do on the offensive line, but it's easier to find guards than it is tackles. And the draft, how many times have we talked about, we as even as the media or as how many times in like pre-post game does it get mentioned that, hey, in college, this guy was a tackle, but he wasn't big enough for the NFL, so they moved him to guard. right? And he's a top guard. That means the pool for the amount of guards that you can get is just bigger. Also, you have Creed Humphrey out there, so you are able to help out a guard. So even the guy that you find who's probably not going to be as good as Trey Smith, you can work with that because you have an all-pro center right next to him. So you're able to get lesser talent to play that position because you can help him out. So it sort of just comes to this, you're sort of at the spot where you have to make tough decisions, and a defensive pass rush is just more important than guard play because you can sort of work your way around getting average to above average guard play. Whereas if you have mediocre or average slash above average pass rush, that you see that affect every single play, even on run plays, because you talked about, and you're right, just how well he is, George Karlaftis is, at playing those outside runs, those counter runs, and how he's able to sort of keep guys contained so Chris Jones or Nick Bolton or whoever can shoot the gaps and is able to, you know, get the running back stopped at the line of scrimmage instead of allowing those running backs to bounce outside and get those big runs on tosses or counters. So this is a tough decision, you know, that Veach is going to have to play, but in Veach we trust. But I agree with you. McDuffie and Karlaftis, they're two of the most important positions on the football field, and you have, they're your guys. You're just going to have to sign them, and there's going to be casualties for that. And I think Trey Smith, unfortunately, is going to be one of those casualties.
I'm of the opinion that when you're looking at replaceable figures, I think that the combination of Trey Smith and Nick Bolton is more easily replaceable than the combination of Trent McDuffie and George Karlaftis. That's just my view. I mean, just think about it from this perspective, right? Since Joe Tooney got kicked out to left tackle, Mike Caliendo has been playing the left guard spot. He's played close to 250 snaps at left guard this year. He has yet to give up a sack at left guard for the Kansas City Chiefs. He has given up just one quarterback hit and only seven pressures as the starting left guard for the Kansas City Chiefs this year. That seems like a guy who's fit it pretty seamlessly. So if you can figure out the left tackle spot and Tooney can slide back to left guard, or if you even want to move him over to right guard and leave Caliendo at left guard, I think you're fine. Or if you want to move him to right guard, Caliendo to replace Trey Smith at right guard, I think you could make that transition just based off what he's done this year. That's the thing, right? Caliendo has been in there for, you know, 6 weeks playing left guard for the Chiefs. I haven't heard much conversation about Mike Caliendo, which is not a bad thing. It's actually a good thing.
Yeah.
Offensive linemen get talked about a whole lot more when they're struggling, right? We hear more and more about Juwan Taylor all the time versus Creed Humphrey because Juwan Taylor is picking up penalties and blah, 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 and pressures and all these things. I think that that is a more easily replaceable piece. And Nick Bolton, as good a player as he is, as sure a tackler as he is, as smart a player as he is, I think he's more easily replaceable than a guy like Trent McDuffie, because a true one-on-one lockdown corner is hard to find in this league. It really is. And at the age that McDuffie is, it's even more incredibly hard. And if you're the Kansas City Chiefs, and I'm not trying to be biased here, but if you're looking for a guy that is comparable in a lot of respects to Nick Bolton, a guy who doesn't wow you with his athleticism, he's maybe not the best pass coverage guy in the world, but he is a smart, sure tackler who's a good rusher of the quarterback when you send him in on a delayed blitz or something, a guy who has a ton of experience coming in, look no further than Jay Higgins from the University of Iowa. I'm telling you, that's a guy that you could nab in like the third round that could very, very well replace a guy like Nick Bolton on a much less pricey tag for a rookie deal for 4 years that I think could put up similar sorts of numbers to what Nick Bolton has accomplished here in his 4 years with the Chiefs.
And I'll say this, too, about the guard position. Kansas City always has, like, that extra lineman sitting around. Think Nick Allegretti, Andrew Wiley,
yep,
right? Those guys. Andrew Wiley is literally playing on the Commanders right now, and they're in the NFC Championship game. So Kansas City is able to find those above-average guards late in the draft. They're able to develop them, and they're able to play quality football. Is Andrew Wiley the best guard in football? No, but he's starting caliber, and he was sitting on the Chiefs roster for a couple of years, right? Just hanging out. So if you're able to find those guys, and Brett Veach and Andy Reid have consistently been able to do it, it's sort of that next guy up mentality because there's a hard salary cap. I know we talk about, we as football fans, football media, we talk about how, oh, there's not really salary cap. No, there's a hard cap. You can just massage it and you're able to, you know, push money off to the end, backload some of these contracts.
Yeah, signing bonuses,
right, that sort of stuff.
Incentives, that sort of stuff.
You can massage it, but it is a hard cap and you have to make hard decisions. Kansas City has made hard decisions over the last couple years. Think like my great example of this is Juan Thornhill, right? Everybody loved Juan Thornhill, but he wasn't a great player. He was a solid player. You can't give good players great contracts. That's how you hurt your team. And that's what Kansas City, you can't do that.
No question. I mean, you talk about, you mentioned Nick Allegretti and Andrew Wiley. Both of those guys were considered depth pieces who just kind of showed up in the midst of a playoff run and helped the Chiefs win a Super Bowl. And they used that as a springboard to big time deals. Now, both of those guys are starting for a team that's playing in an NFC championship game. Wiley is starting and has started 14 games this year for the Commanders at right tackle, including yesterday. Nick Allegretti has started every single game this season for the Washington Commanders at right guard. That is the level of depth. I think that Mike Caliendo could kind of be that next guy. And then, you know, another one that we're hearing about a lot along those same lines of Wiley and Allegretti and now Mike Caliendo, there's a lot of conversation about Hunter Norzad that's being thrown around all over the place, right? A guy who played FCS college football, and, you know, he's kind of being given that same sort of trajectory and storyline surrounding this Chiefs team. So keep an eye. I mean, Hunter Norzad is a guy that 2 or 3 years down the line is going to somehow make his way onto the Chiefs starting lineup and be a big part of a Chiefs Super Bowl runner. At least we hope so. Our phone number, 913-586-7965. Got a message from a 913, says that Wiley and Allegretti both starting for Washington. Exactly. And they were, neither one of those guys were considered big time offensive linemen, but that's just what the Chiefs do. Give a lot of credit to Andy Reid and that offensive coaching staff and the O-line coach and the guys that are working in that room. Got a message from an 816, says, isn't the Trey replacement here Caliendo? Likely, yes. Mike Caliendo would be that guy to slide in and take care of it. 913 says, the Greek freak is starting to turn it on. Oh, no doubt. No doubt, George Karloftis, absolutely unbelievable. I think the Chiefs need to find a way to extend him this offseason with no doubt, no reservation in my mind whatsoever. A lot more coming up here. We're going to preview these other two divisional round games in the NFL. You've got Rams-Eagles this afternoon, and then coming up this evening, you've got the other AFC divisional round game, Ravens-Bills, and the Chiefs will await that winner trying to get to their fifth Super Bowl in 6 years. Absolutely unreal. This is After Hours. Logan Weber joined by Quentin Morris here on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan. I know this is supposed to be a happy day. Chiefs get a win over the Texans. They're going to their seventh straight AFC championship game. But I have to say this, and this is going to come out aggressive, but it has to be done. Rob Manfred, would you get off your ass and do something about the Los Angeles Dodgers? Oh my God, it never ends. 25 minutes ago, MLB reporting that the Dodgers have signed Tanner Scott to a 4-year deal worth in upwards of $72 million. Where is this money coming from? What is happening? I cannot take this. So they signed the biggest international free agent of the year. You signed Ohtani to a deal worth over $750 million. They've got like over $1 billion in deferred payments, and they're seemingly still, like I said earlier this week, I'm fairly certain that the Los Angeles Dodgers need to be federally investigated because they have got to have a printing press somewhere in the facility that is just illegally printing money for this organization to spend that there's just no possible way they have. Major League Baseball, this is ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
So they signed that the free agent Sasaki, I think. Sasaki is how, yeah. 3 years ago, he was talked about as the best pitcher in the Japanese baseball, right? And now he's coming over here. And you know what the crazy part is the Dodgers didn't offer him the most money, because for those signings, for those like the international free agent signings, you're capped on how much money you can spend. And the Dodgers were the Padres and I believe maybe the Pirates, one of the Central NL Central teams, and the Blue Jays offered him more money, and he still signed with the Dodgers. So we're getting to the point where it's like, what are you doing? Thank God the Dodgers are in the National League, that I don't have to deal with it. Plus, they're on the West Coast, and West Coast games start at like midnight here in Kansas City, so I don't have to deal with the Dodgers. Because if I was a Padres fan or an Angels fan, my life would be miserable.
I cannot fathom it. These are the contracts that we're staring at. Mookie Betts, 12 years, $365 million. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, 12 years, $325 million. Shohei Ohtani, 10 years, $700 million. Freddie Freeman, 6 years, $162 million. Will Smith, 10 years, $140 million. Blake Snell, 5 years, $140 million. Tyler Glasnow, 4 years, $115. Tommy Edman, 5 for $60. Chris Taylor, 4 for $60. Now you've got Sasaki signing a deal. Now you sign Tanner Scott to a $70 million contract.
And unlike a team like the Mets, where they're just outspending money, the Dodgers' field of their from their AAA down is also great. So they're signing these big free agents, but they're also just good at developing people in their farm system. It's incredible from a Dodgers standpoint, but when people, whether you're here in the Midwest or you're a Padres fan, whatever, and they talk about how baseball is an inherently uneven sport, and people are like, no, whatever. Then you got crap like this happening. It's like, what are you supposed to do?
It's a beautiful thing when you see a small market team go out and be successful, right? The Royals of 2014 and 15, the Rays did it, you know, late 2010s, early 2020s. You know, they had some good years there, but they couldn't quite get over the hump. But it's those are few and far between. It shouldn't be that hard for a small market team to be successful. We should not have to sit here and watch teams with billion-dollar payrolls go out and still be able to sign everybody imaginable. The deferred payments thing is
that needs to go. Like that's
like pyramid scheme levels of cringe. It just seems disgusting and deplorable like behavior.
Look, I'm gonna sell you some protein powder, but if you're able to sell more protein powder to your buddies, you know, then I'll sell you more protein powder so you can then sell it to your friends again so they can sell it to more people.
Yeah. The whole thing is a gigantic scam. My only hope, and I've said this before, man, I just have to hope that, like, when all is said and done and, like, all these guys' careers are done and the Dodgers now have to face the Pied Piper and pay off all this deferred money, that they suck for, like, 20 years. I hope they are just absolute bottom of the barrel, dumpster fire level bad for 20 years after Ohtani and Mookie and Freddie and all those guys are gone. There's just no way that this should be allowed.
But even guys like Freddie, you know, he signed a team-friendly deal.
Right.
He could have gotten so much more money if he went off in free agency, but instead he chose to stay in LA and he's offensively, he's one of the best catchers, if not the best.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.
Catcher in the National League, and his on-base percentage is phenomenal. And he's able to take this smaller deal and he wants to stay in the Dodgers. So they go out and spend this big money on free agents. And like I said, their homegrown guys stay. I mean, it truly just shows the complexity in the system. But also, if you have the money, you know, you can go out and spend it. There was no other sport like baseball. This was a problem. I know you're not a big hockey guy. This was a problem in hockey 10 years ago, something like that. where they didn't have a hard cap. Now they do, and it made hockey more competitive.
It's the only major professional sport that doesn't have any kind of salary cap or floor of any kind. It is entirely payroll-based.
It is. They have what they call a luxury tax.
Yeah.
And what will happen is, I mean, it's like if you spend over this much, every $1 million you spend over their quote-unquote salary cap, you then have to pay the league an extra $1 million or whatever the calculation comes out to be. That's their quote-unquote salary cap.
Right. Got a 913 says that you're mad about deferred money, you know, with Mahomes. Otani doing the same thing.
It's not the same thing.
It's within the rules. It's not the same thing.
Because Otani's, they have a hard salary cap.
Right. Well, and Mahomes, his money is being deferred towards the end of his contract, but it's still within the contract parameters itself. Otani's not going to start getting the biggest chunk of this $700 million until the contract is done with. They're going to be paying him until 2048. Otani's going to be 55 years old, still playing Major League Baseball? I don't think so.
What's that Mets guy?
Bobby Bonilla.
It's like June 3rd, July 3rd, something like that. It's Bobby Bonilla Day, and he gets another check from the Mets.
And that's fine if it's like a one-off thing here or there, right? With Bobby Bonilla, or, you know, got a 563 saying the Brewers are still paying Ryan Braun. I understand. There's a few of them here, there, and other places. But the Dodgers have 9 guys on their roster that are making over it's over $1 billion in deferred payments. $1 billion in deferred payments, that's got to be borderline illegal. Like, there's just no way I just had to get off my soapbox when I saw that on MLB, but I'm not going to spend the rest of the show talking about Major League Baseball. I want to talk about the divisional round of the playoffs, Rams, Eagles, Bills, Ravens going on this afternoon and this evening. We've got a college football playoff national championship game coming up, and we're going to be talking about that at 11 o'clock with our guest, Drew Nixon, who is, of course, the producer of the Midday Show, Cody and Gold, here on 96.5, so we'll be chatting with him at 11. But coming up, we're going to talk about this Eagles-Rams game this afternoon and who the Chiefs will see in the AFC championship game next week in a matchup between Buffalo and Baltimore. Logan Weber here with Quentin Morris. This is After Hours on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan. That's a good song.
That was appropriate for the vibe of the show.
Very, very appropriate. Because you can't stop Kansas City. Can't stop Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs from getting to an AFC championship game. 7 years, 7 AFC championship game bursts. One game away from an opportunity that has never been seen before in the National Football League, right? You've seen teams win 2 in a row. There have even been teams who won 2 in a row who got to an AFC championship game, but that have got to a conference championship game, I should say. But none of those teams were able to win their conference championship and even get to the Super Bowl to get to that ultimate goal of the three-peat. And the Chiefs are now 60 minutes away from becoming the first back-to-back champs to get to a third straight Super Bowl and could have an opportunity to get a Super Bowl trophy put in the case for the third straight year and their fourth time in the last 6 seasons. Absolutely unbelievable levels. And honestly, I think, as has been the case for much of Mahomes' career, I think that their opponent in the AFC championship game will be a more talented and tougher task than who they ultimately meet in the Super Bowl. That doesn't mean that they, you know, they'll get to the Super Bowl and automatically win based off of the fact that the opponent in the AFC title game is better. I'm just saying, I think that this team is their opponent next week will be a more talented club, and it'll be a tougher sort of matchup. And the opponent is going to be one of the usual suspects in either the Buffalo Bills or the Baltimore Ravens. Today, 5:30 on CBS from Highmark Stadium in Orchard Park, Josh Allen and the Bills will host Lamar and the Ravens, two guys who are right there neck and neck competing for an MVP trophy this season, right? Lamar's looking for the third of his career. Meanwhile, Josh Allen, if he gets it, it'll be the first of his career. If Josh Allen were to win this game, it would be the second AFC championship game of his career. For Lamar and company, it would be their second straight after they got to the AFC title game last year against Kansas City and ultimately lost that game. Man, I don't know. I look at this game and I think that Baltimore is the better football team. I think that Vegas agrees. Right now, Baltimore is a 1-point favorite despite being the road team in this football game. I love what Derrick Henry has been given to this team, because not only because of his production on the field, but because of what he provides Lamar Jackson in terms of his psyche. Lamar doesn't feel like he has to win it all by himself anymore. He doesn't feel like he has to be Superman every single week, right? That's kind of what Josh Allen is having to deal with in Buffalo. He has to be Superman every week for the Buffalo Bills to win because their defense has had some problems. James Cook and the running game have been fairly consistent, but they've had their woes as well. Their receiving core has been injury riddled and things like that. Keon Coleman's missed some time. Khalil Shakir's missed some time. They traded for Amari Cooper and things have been a little bit better in that respect, but he's still trying to figure things out. I look at this game and I see a win for the Baltimore Ravens. I think that this feels like the kind of game where neither offense is going to be slowed down to any real extent, but the Baltimore Ravens are going to be able to string together a few more successful offensive drives and win this game, you know, sort of like a 38-31 or a 35-28 sort of a game that the Ravens are able to get the W and get to yet another AFC championship game.
What's crazy is that Derrick Henry was a really good running back in Tennessee. Went to Baltimore, and now I think everybody now agrees that he's just an elite running back. Saquon Barkley was a good running back with the Giants, goes to the Eagles, top-tier running back. I think that if he was playing not behind literally the worst offensive line in football for 4 years, he would have been doing a lot of this in New York or wherever he would have ended up in that situation. But I can't think of another running back who was like good in one place, then went to another place in free agency, and everybody just agrees like, oh, this guy's like the real deal. Priest Holmes, when he left Baltimore and came to Kansas, he was good in Baltimore, but came to Kansas City and had back-to-back-to-back like 1,200-yard seasons. But I can't think, and maybe the text line can help out on this, I can't think of another year where we've had that happen in free agency, and happening it to two different running backs in the same season. It's kind of crazy to me that this happened, that it just sort of timed out well for both these running backs to get on playoff-ready teams, really good teams, and then for them to just explode onto the field, and everybody universally is like, oh yeah, these are the two best running backs in football right now, and it's not close.
Yeah, I mean, I think that Christian McCaffrey could probably be thrown into that category.
Yeah,
to
but he
some
was
extent.
Traded.
When he was sent over to San Francisco, I think for Saquon and Derrick Henry, you know, them leaving in free agency and ending up in spots that were absolutely unequivocally perfect for them. I mean, they could not have landed in two better positions. What Nick Sirianni and the Eagles want to do offensively is like a hand in a glove with what Saquon Barkley provides you in the running back position. What John Harbaugh and the Ravens want to do offensively fit like a hand in a glove with who Derrick Henry is as a running back. It was just a match made in heaven for those guys. They went out and they got their money. They went to winning organizations. And then you've got, it just schematically, it fit perfectly. Got a 913 says, if you count Josh Jacobs, there's three this year. Yeah, Josh Jacobs was
great. Good point.
Going over to Green Bay from Vegas and had a good year, right? Kind of slowed down towards the end of the season, but he really had a good year all in all. So could not agree more with what's happened. And I find it interesting, right? What was this such a huge talking point in the NFL in the last 5 years?
I was getting ready to bring this up.
Running backs, blah, blah, blah. They don't matter all that much. Running backs this, running backs that. You can replace running backs and all the different things, right? And it's like, okay, sure. And then the NFL comes out this year and defensive coordinators are like, you know, screw this deep vertical threat passing attack. We're going too deep. We're going to put two safeties 20 yards off the ball. You're not going to beat us deep. If you're going to beat us, it's going to be the West Coast style crossing routes, nickel and dime us down the field, or you're going to run the football because we're only going to put six guys in the box. We're only going to put seven guys in the box. And teams have been gashing teams with the running back position this year. And I think it's led to a little bit of a resurgence, right? I know that the NFL is a pass-first league, and it will probably always be a pass-first league. But after all the controversy and all the conversation about is the running back important, running back position all that important anymore, it has been proven that it is absolutely an important position, right? I'm not going to go so far as to say I am one of those people that is, I'm of the opinion you don't take a running back in round one of the NFL draft. That's just my view on it, right? Unless that guy is an otherworldly level talent, right? If it's a Saquon Barkley or a Christian McCaffrey or Derrick Henry type, okay, you can take that guy in the first round. I would say, you know, late first round, somewhere in the 20s by chance, you know. I thought as good a running back as Bijan Robinson was in college, I thought the Falcons going up to number 8 to draft him was really, really high. I think, you know, look at like Ashton Jeanty this year with Boise State. I think he'll be the first running back off the board. I think he is a borderline first round pick. I can't see anybody taking him higher than number 20 overall. That's just my view on it. That doesn't mean that running backs aren't consequential and important to a team's overall success, because they obviously are. Look at what Saquon's done with the Eagles. Look at what Derrick Henry's done with the Ravens. Look at what Kareem Hunt has done with the Kansas City Chiefs to some extent, right? When they bring him in after the injury to Pacheco and you're like, okay, I mean, are we going to go with Carson Steele and Samaje Perine to lead the running back room? Well, let's go get Kareem Hunt up off the couch and see what he can provide. And he has been massive for the Chiefs' success. And he was massive yesterday. Big runs when it mattered most, a big fourth down run, a huge third and goal from the one that he was able to punch in. I think that running backs have begun a little bit of a renaissance, a resurgence in some respect, and proven, hey, good running back play can help you win a football game, even in today's day and age of the NFL.
And I think this is going to change the way defenses are built. Like, here's an example. The Ravens, one of the reasons I think the Ravens are going to win tonight is because they're just a bigger team than Buffalo. Buffalo has built that defense, smaller linebackers, in order to beat the passing game. And Baltimore is built. Their offensive line is huge. Derrick Henry, Lamar Jackson, they're both huge runners. So you have that big size advantage, and it's just going to be easier to move the ball down the field in the run game, right? If you can run the ball for 5-6 yards a clip, then your average yard per carry is just as efficient as a good passing game. So it doesn't matter that maybe you throw the ball a little less. I think that that's why the Ravens are going to win this game. I think that means that teams like Buffalo may take a look in the mirror and say, man, we can't continue to draft these speed, athletic, sort of undersized linebackers. Maybe we need to go back to drafting some of these bigger linebackers and go into free agency and get some of these bigger corners and safeties that are better inside the box and maybe not so good in the run game. And I think that is going to reverberate around the league, because we've seen more and more of these defenses sort of go smaller, faster on the back seven. And I think we're going to have to get a turnaround to go bigger, slower, to be in the box and hit guys that are running the football down your throat.
Look at what the Chiefs have done, right? Look at the Chiefs linebacker core. You've got Nick Bolton, Leo Chanel, and you've got Drew Tranquil. Now, Tranquil is fairly good in pass coverage, right? But he's the best of the three, and he's not a world beater in pass coverage as a linebacker. All three of those guys are there to be able to rush the passer on blitzes when it's necessary and stop the run and cover their zones to the best of their ability, right? Chiefs are one of the worst teams in the NFL at covering tight ends this year. But they are one of the best teams in the National Football League at stopping the run, and that is due in very large part to having a strong, aggressive defensive line to eat up blocks and open up gaps for those linebackers to shoot through. And then when they get there and they get in that phone booth with a back, they're sure tacklers. And I think that you're exactly right. You look around the league, and I think you could definitely see some semblance of change in that respect. And if the Ravens are able to run the football effectively, which I believe they will, running the football is, depending on, you know, what your strategy is, can be as important, if not more important, than a good passing game. Because if you run the football effectively, if you're averaging 4-5 yards a carry and you're generating a first down on every 2 or 3 plays, not only are you controlling the ball, you're controlling the clock by eating up time of possession. And in an effective running game is sort of like a quality fast break or half court offense in basketball, is how I describe it. You control the tempo. If you're running the football and you're trying to play a slow, methodical, you know, some would say monotonous style of football in some respect, you are controlling the time of possession. You're keeping the ball out of Josh Allen's hands, which is a huge factor in this football game. That is as effective as a team who has a really good half-court offense and defense, sort of like Virginia, right? Those Virginia teams under Tony Bennett. They were so good at controlling the tempo of the game. No matter who they were playing against, they dictated what the tempo of the game would look like, and it would play into their favor. That was where they were the most comfortable. The Buffalo Bills are not comfortable in that style of game. They want to put up points. They want to score a ton, right? That's just what they do. That's Josh Allen's philosophy. Going slowly, methodically, having the ball twice a half, three times a half, that's just not really what he's accustomed to. So I think that that could be a major, major factor in this football game, is Baltimore being able to control the clock, control the time of possession, and control the tempo of this football game and take Buffalo out of their comfort zone with what they like to do offensively, generating quick scores and generating lots of possessions with the football. We got more to talk about here. We got another game going on, the NFC divisional round game between the Rams and the Eagles. Who will the Commanders play next week in the NFC Championship game? Could it be an all NFC East final in the National Football Conference? We'll wait and see. We're going to talk about that coming up next on After Hours with Logan Weber and Quentin Morris here on 96.5 The Fan. Just finished up previewing the Ravens-Bills game, the AFC divisional round game going on tonight on CBS, a 5:30 kick there. But we do have an NFC divisional round game. Who the opponent will be for the Washington Commanders will be decided this afternoon at around 2 o'clock with the kickoff on NBC and Peacock at Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia. The Los Angeles Rams against the Philadelphia Eagles. Rams got a bit of an upset win, I guess you could say, last week against the Minnesota Vikings in a game that was supposed to be a home game for LA. But of course, with the tragic wildfires occurring in the Los Angeles area, they had to move the game to State Farm Stadium in Glendale. Didn't matter, though, as the Rams were able to dominate that game from start to finish, make life miserable on Sam Darnold, sacked him 9 times, and they were able to get the victory. In this game, Philly is seen as a 6.5-point favorite. I really like the Rams to cover that. I don't know about necessarily win that game, but the way that they played last week, I was duly impressed, right? I mean, Puka Nacua had a great day. Cooper Kupp didn't have a lot of effectiveness in the game. I don't think that that'll stand for long. He's too talented a receiver to be kept down too many weeks in a row. Kyren Williams did enough in that game. I think he is one of the most underrated backs in this league, the second-year man out of Texas A&M. And that Rams defense, right? I talked about it. I had some concerns about this Rams team last week and the lack of experience in big moments and playoff games and things like that. Man, they proved me and a lot of others wrong in a big, big way against the Minnesota Vikings offensive line that was considered one of the better units in football. If they can not stop, because you're not going to be able to stop somebody the caliber of a Saquon Barkley, but if you're able to contain Saquon, if you're able to make 6 and 8 yard runs for Saquon, 3 to 4 yard gains, and you know, you take him from a game where he might have 20 carries for 120 yards and make it 20 for 75 or 80, and you make Jalen Hurts beat you with his arm, something that he hasn't had to do this season. Jalen Hurts has 1 300-yard passing game this year. 1. And that was week 3 against the New Orleans Saints. He hasn't had a game over 250 yards passing in, I think, like something like 8 or 9 weeks. I mean, he has not had to throw the football. He only threw the ball 21 times last week against the Packers. He had less than 200 yards passing. So if you can effectively contain Saquon and make Jalen Hurts and the Eagles beat you with his arm, I think that you stand a chance. I'm not saying they'll win, but I think that that gives you a better opportunity to try to take down an Eagles team and prevent what could be another iteration of a Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl. That would be miraculous. That in the last, you know, the Chiefs win next week, if they do win next week, which I believe they will, over the Ravens or the Bills, and they get to another Super Bowl, they have an opportunity to win their fourth Super Bowl against the team that they won their second Super Bowl against after they beat the Niners twice, their first and third time around. I don't think the NFL fan base as a whole would be satisfied with yet another Chiefs-Eagles Super Bowl.
Just to show my biases aside, I think the Rams are going to win this game. And I think that because the Rams defensive line is just so much better than it was at the beginning of the year. Matthew Stafford, when he's on, he's one of the best quarterbacks in football. And I think a lot of the criticism that Lamar Jackson got early in his career, copy and paste that and give it to Jalen Hurts. Outside of the fact that Jalen Hurts has made the playoffs, I think if you watch them stylistically, the Eagles just have more help around Hurts than what Lamar Jackson had. And so some of his flaws are hidden away. But if you're talking about a quarterback and you say, hey, the way to beat him is to force him to throw the football, then I'm just going to give it, I'm going to put it inside of Matthew Stafford's hands, who even on really bad teams was able to make some games out of it. So yeah, I just don't trust a team that has what I believe is a bad head coach and a quarterback that the way to beat him is to force him to play the quarterback position.
I agree. I really do. I think that, yeah, if you're able to put the Eagles in a situation where you're going to have to win or lose with the right arm of Jalen Hurts, I think that that most definitely plays into the favor of the Los Angeles Rams. I mean, Jalen Hurts, I think the Eagles finished like 28th or 29th in the National Football League in passing yards. They were dead last in the NFL in passing yards in the final 12 weeks of the season. Make him beat you throwing the football 40 times because he hasn't had to throw the football 40 times. That, I think, could make this a very, very interesting game for the Los Angeles Rams. And if you're able to do that, the opportunity presents itself to generate a couple of turnovers, right? If you're able to turn a team over, that swings the game even more in your favor. Just ask your counterpart in the Washington Commanders and what they were able to do against this world-defeating team in the Detroit Lions. And, you know, I poke fun at the Lions. I was disappointed. I was. I love that Lions football team. I love Dan Campbell and the philosophy and the culture that he's instilled there in Detroit. Just can't turn the ball over five times in a game and expect to win, especially when you don't generate one against your opponent. And you've got a quality quarterback in Jaden Daniels, who is quickly emerging as a top 10 signal caller in this league as a rookie, which is just absolutely unbelievable. One more hour of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan coming up. When we come back, we are going to be talking college football and the college football playoff national championship game between Notre Dame and Ohio State with Drew Nixon. He is the midday producer of Cody Gold right here on The Fan. So stick around. More coming up here on After Hours with Logan Weber and Quentin Morris on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
As the U.S. men's national team takes center stage at a home World Cup, make sure you're listening to Call It What You Want, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can join me, I'm Jimmy Conrad, alongside Charlie Davies, Tony Miola, Marcelo Balboa, and Benny Feilhaber throughout this tournament for previews, instant reactions, and analysis of every U.S. match. Then all summer, we're back every Tuesday and Thursday, covering all things U.S. men's national team. Download and follow Call It What You Want on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.